Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Thank you for joining us in this, the latest edition of the OI's podcast series. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm today joined by Professor Jonathan Stern, who is Distinguished Research Fellow at the Institute. Now, we're here today to discuss his energy insight, greenhouse gas emissions from LNG trade, from carbon neutral to GHG verified. That was published by the OIES in September 2022. Now, just to timestamp this recording, in the ever-changing market that we live in, we are recording this podcast on the morning of Monday, the 24th of October, 2022. Jonathan, welcome back to the OIS podcast series. Now, Jonathan, you know, this paper you've written builds on earlier research you've done on the importance of measuring, reporting, and verifying methane emissions in the gas and LNG trade. So, you know, can we start this podcast by asking how and why has this issue of greenhouse gas or GHG emissions from LNG trade become so important?
Well, in general, emissions are becoming part of the social license to operate. And that's really irrespective of whether you think net zero targets are going to be met. But of course, in Europe, that's a very important subject. But the reason this has become particularly important for LNG is that one of the major consequences of the current crisis is likely to be that in order to replace Russian gas in Europe, there is going to be a huge increase in LNG imports, which has already started with many countries ordering FSRUs and Germany, for example, building two or three fixed regasification terminals.
Okay, so perhaps let's go back to basics, you know. What are carbon neutral LNG cargoes and how many have evolved in terms of numbers and destination of cargoes?
So a carbon neutral LNG cargo is an LNG cargo where the emissions, the greenhouse gas emissions from all or part of the supply chain have been offset by purchasing credits from a number of registries in the voluntary carbon market. Now, as far as we know, about 50, I've actually calculated, 53 cargoes have been transacted since 2019. Most of them, it has to be said, last year in 2021. And the key thing really is that most of them have been landed in Asia. So the, you know, one or two have been landed in Europe, or one in Mexico, one in the Dominican Republic, but this is largely an Asian phenomenon. And it looks as if they're a little bit reducing this year. The remaining cargoes that have been, the 11 cargoes that I've calculated for this year, have been going mainly to Japanese city gas companies.
Oh, no. Okay. So that doesn't seem like many cargoes to me, bearing in mind, you know, hundreds or indeed thousands of cargoes are traded each year of LNG. So, you know, what do we know about how emissions from these cargoes has been measured, reported and verified, and how have they been offset?
Well, in answer to your first observation, no, it's not many cargoes. And the expectation had been that the numbers would grow dramatically, and that hasn't happened. And I believe that a reason for that is that we really know very little about the measurement, reporting, verification of these cargoes. So if you take a look at the list, which is in the paper that was published in September, you'll see that for many of these cargoes, we don't even know the origin of the cargo. We don't know, you know, the country from which it originated. A lot of them, we don't exactly know the buyer. And for many of them, there's no information at all other than the announcement. Now, what I've managed to do by getting some information from particularly the Vera Registry is to get details of the volume of emissions. And when you do that, what you see is there's all the emission volumes are different. Most of them are between 200 and 250,000 tons of CO2 equivalent, but we don't know anything about the gases involved. In other words, how much CO2, how much methane, and we don't know how they were measured, how they're being reported, and whether any organization independently verified them. So it's really problematic, because if you are looking at this in terms of environmental credibility, what you would have to say is we really don't know enough about the cargoes to say whether they are credible environmentally or not.
Okay, Jonathan, so can you perhaps tell our listeners about the measurement, reporting and verification, or MRV, frameworks for gas and LNG emissions which have been developed, and also, you know, the prospective regulation and legislation of emissions in both Europe and the US?
So nearly a year ago, in November last year, GIIGNL, the well-known LNG trade association, and SGE, which is a consortium led by Pavilion in Singapore and including Chevron and Qatar Energy, published separate methodologies. I don't really have time to go into the detail, but just in general terms, GIIGNL is a full life cycle methodology, in other words, from production to end use. And SGE is a production to delivery at the border. They both focus on reporting particularly methane emissions over 100 years, which is a little bit of a problem for reporting, as many organizations are now saying with net zero targets, you need to report over a much shorter time horizon. But essentially, they're detailed methodologies, and we can have reasonable confidence, given that they set out very clearly what the verification qualifications are, have to be accredited verifiers, they must have technical qualifications. These are useful methodologies, but with one exception, there's no record of them having been used so far. Now, if we move on and talk for a moment about the legislation and regulation, we have the EU methane regulation, which was published last year. It's a proposal. It hasn't been confirmed yet. But essentially what that says is that from the start of 2026, there will be standards which all natural gas and LNG imports into the EU will need to meet. And if they don't meet them, then there will be charges, so far unspecified, levied on them to reflect these emissions. More recently, the US Inflation Reduction Act introduced a methane fee, this is on domestic natural gas, from 2024, initially based on engineering calculations from the Environmental Protection Agency. But most importantly, from 2026, this will be based on empirical measurements, i.e. measurements of methane. And for each part of the value chain, there will be a different standard. So from 2026, the allowable emissions, in other words, the emissions that you won't have to pay the fee on, will be 0.2% for production, 0.11% for compression, transmission and storage, and 0.05% for processing, LNG, export, import and storage, gathering and boosting. So what you see here is that progressively OECD countries with stringent targets are beginning to introduce measures which will really impact the costs of doing business if your emissions are higher than the allowed standard.
Okay, so how do you think, therefore, Jonathan, responsibility for measurement, reporting and verification of greenhouse gas emissions should be determined along the LNG supply chain?
Okay, this is in a sense a little bit difficult, because the usual way of expressing this is in terms of scopes 1, 2 and 3 from the Greenhouse Gas Protocol. Now, unfortunately, those scopes don't work well with either natural gas or oil supply chains. And the reason is that you need to place the assets which are emitting into different, what I call in the paper, segments. So, for example, I have a kind of wellhead to border segment where what I I call that, for example, that's production, exploration, and liquefaction. Now, I stress that because if you look at some methodologies, for example, how the IEA calculates emissions, they don't have liquefaction in that segment. But for me, the key thing is that wherever you have the assets, whether it's liquefaction, shipping, regasification, distribution, you need to attribute the emissions to those who hold the assets. And if I may just go on about this for a little while longer, one of the major problems for me about carbon neutral LNG is that it purports to encompass emissions from the whole supply chain, that is, from the wellhead all the way down to the end user. And my contention is, unless, for example, you're in a very unusual situation, say, for example, you're exporting LNG to a Japanese electricity plant, which is right next to the regasification plant on the coast, then you can say, well, you have a very good idea of the end-use emissions because the regasification plant is right there, there's a short pipeline, and then all the LNG is used in the power generation plant. But if you are in what I call the usual situation, where most of the LNG is regasified, and then it's sent to a number of distributors, and they send it to households or commercial or power plants, then how can you possibly represent that you know what those emissions are, unless you are the utility or the regulator of the utility? And so this is why I'm very keen on responsibility for emissions falling to those who own the assets.
Okay, Jonathan, you know, can we perhaps now talk about the kind of the recommendations in your paper relating to measurement, reporting, and verification and transparency? Now, you know, you've outlined there are three elements: measurement, reporting, verification, as I've said, but also confidentiality. So let's start with, you know, measurement. You know, what are your recommendations?
Okay, well, measurement is for carbon dioxide relatively straightforward. It's relatively straightforward for nitrous oxide, which is only a small component, but something that should be taken into account. The real difficulty comes when we talk about methane. And this is now becoming a major issue for, in a sense, all producers and transporters of methane. So most of the public domain data that we have are about estimates, and those estimates are usually based on engineering calculations, and those engineering calculations are usually based on US Environmental Protection Agency factors, which were firstly established for a US environment, and secondly established 20 or 30 years ago. And most of the work that's been published in the US, there's been less work published elsewhere, but even in the US, the findings are that when you try and measure emissions empirically, you get much higher numbers than the EPA estimates. And then, of course, if you're in a different country, then the question is, well, actually, why are you using EPA estimates anyway? Because they were not designed for, you know, there's a very, very important set of engineering assets which the EPA uses, some of which are not used at all elsewhere. So that's one problem with measurement. The other problem with measurement is the difference between the so-called top-down and bottom-up estimates. So the bottom-up estimates are observations at the field, at the pipeline level, and they are sophisticated usually, but they do not include methane emissions which may be escaping aerially, which are too high, the altitude is too high to be picked up on the ground. So those estimates can be observed with drones, with aircraft overflights, or with satellites. And the key thing then is, well, can you, And indeed, have you tried to reconcile the top down with the bottom up? And if you have, did you get a reasonably close approximation? And the answer to most of those questions is no. Either you haven't done it, or when you tried to do it, it was very difficult. Now, the aerial observations are improving a lot because satellites are becoming much more sophisticated and granular. But for example, if you're in snow-covered terrain, if you're offshore, you can't use satellites because they can't pick up the emissions. So then you have to use aircraft overflights. That is good, but a little bit more expensive. Then there's the question of drones. How high should they go? How much do they pick up? So you can see that this is becoming really, really complicated. And sort of lastly, because I'm in danger of going on about this interminably, but it is really important. Lastly, how frequently are these observations being made? So one of the things that is now being said is you must have 24/7 observations, because at certain times of day, you may be emitting more, i.e. there may be a malfunction, but it may be temporary, or it may be that at certain times of the day, the classic example is liquids unloading. When you do certain functions, you emit more. Now, the key thing then is, have you got observations 24/7? Most satellites fly over once a day. Most aircraft overflights are every few days. So perhaps drones are the answer to that. But you can see that as we sort of go on into the detail, you start to get huge complications that what you suspect is that most of these LNG cargoes that are called carbon neutral have not gone into this detail.
Yeah, and as I've always said, Jonathan, the devil is in the detail. We mustn't forget that. Okay, so what about kind of one of your other recommendations about kind of reporting and verification? What are your views there?
Okay, so reporting is complicated. If you report in CO2 equivalent units, so-called CO2e. So what companies do for convenience is they look at the different gases, as I say, CO2, methane, NOx, maybe some of the other smaller gases, different gases, but smaller compositions. And they convert all of those gases into a carbon dioxide equivalent. Now, the problem with that, as I think I mentioned a little bit earlier, is that particularly for methane, depending on the time horizon that you take, you get a very different CO2 equivalent. So methane is a short-lived greenhouse gas, but it has a much higher forcing component than CO2. And to give you an idea, if you measure methane over 100 years, which is what most companies do, what most governments do, and what the IPCC standard is, if you measure over 100 years, you get a CO2 equivalent of between 25 and 30 times the potency of CO2. Now, if you have net zero 2050 targets, in other words, somewhere less than 30 years away, you should be measuring over, say, 25, 27 years. And if you do that, you get a figure of much more like 65 to 70 times the potency of CO2. So there's a real question of, are you being transparent over the time horizon over which you're reporting? Now, verification is another really quite serious problem, because those companies that have or say they have verified their emissions, most of the verification organizations that I've seen are the classic accounting, big six accounting companies. Now, not saying anything bad about accounting companies, but you know, with the best will in the world, what these guys do is to look at the numbers that the companies have produced, look at the arithmetic and say, yes, that looks reasonable to us, you know, with the assumptions that you've made, that you calculated correctly what your emissions are. But of course, with all of the uncertainties that we've talked about, the real problem is, unless someone has done an equivalent measurement on the asset, in other words, taken a sample and compared their independent measurement with what the company is reporting, it really can't be said to be credible. And if you're going to take a sample, then obviously you have to have technical qualifications, you have to have your own equipment, and you have to be able to say credibly, yes, no, the result that we obtained was within X percent of what the company is reporting. And that is really what needs to happen. You know, verifiers with technical qualifications and with independent credibility, so that if somebody objects and says, well, we think the numbers are much higher, then you can say, well, then you need to address yourself to this technical company who will show you what results they obtained.
Now, Jonathan, you know, you've been, over the last kind of few minutes, you've been talking about a lot of data, of course, being kind of issued and given. You know, isn't there a concern by many companies on the confidentiality of this reporting of this information?
Okay, well, for me, I cannot see why emissions from assets should be confidential. In other words, I don't know what you would be revealing as a company that somehow would compromise your commercial position. We're not asking, at least I'm not asking, for financial information. You know, how much you paid for anything, who received what money. That nothing to do with that. What we're asking for credibility is, show us that you know what your emissions are from this asset, and show us that someone independent has verified them. Now, I have heard the argument that, oh, if we tell you our emissions, that means you know how much we're producing, and that is a confidential. I personally just don't buy that argument, frankly. You know, the credibility is incredibly important here, and really, transparency is what provides credibility.
It's interesting because, of course, you know, by saying those statements, you are, of course, challenging the LNG industry, which has historically actually been very confidential in its nature, its contracting, and also its reporting. Well, let's end up by, you know, one of your recommendations, if I can challenge you there, you know, because you've recommended that the LNG community should move from carbon neutral to greenhouse gas verified LNG and separate emissions from cargoes from offset transactions. Now, why is that?
So what I've tried to say in the paper and also here is that I just don't think that carbon neutral cargoes are a credible environmental proposition. And I think it's increasingly important that the LNG industry has a credible environmental and emissions story to tell. You know, this is, as I said at the start, part of the social license to operate. LNG is becoming much more important, possibly more important than many of us ever thought it would become, as in terms of natural gas trade. And if the industry wants to expand in a way which is not going to be challenged by the environmental and, let's face it, governments who have to know increasingly what emissions are because they've got their own targets, if the industry wants to remain credible in the face of those increasing problems, then I think it needs to say, here are our emissions. We have decided to offset them, and here is detail of the offsets, but the two parts of that equation don't have to go together. And what I would sort of finally end up by saying is, you know, at the moment we're in a crisis. A lot of the talk about emissions and targets and climate change has a little bit been swept off the agenda by this crisis. But I think this will come back with a vengeance when the crisis passes.
Well, Jonathan, I think, you know, the gauntlet is down very clearly to the industry, and let's see how they kind of respond to that challenge. And, you know, also, you know, thank you so much for giving us your time today. And, you know, the discussion that certainly builds on the messages from your paper, Greenhouse Gas Emissions from LNG Trade, from Carbon Neutral to GHG Verified. That was published by the OIES in September 2022. I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org. at oxfordenergy.org.